Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Welcome back, Wheelchair Nerds. It is time for another episode. I think this is episode 19. We are fast going through our season one. So many things are happening. It is the fall here in Virginia. So leaves are changing. Excited about this time of year. Got my pumpkin spice coffee creamer in my coffee as I sip. But I'm super excited because we were able to get our podcast guest. One of them lives on the West Coast. One of them is out there for business. They are recording this at 7 a.m. They're that dedicated wheelchair nerds. So we love it. Before we get started, just as a reminder, I always have to say this on the podcast to make sure people are aware. Anything we talk about, remember, this is just one or two circumstances. You always need to talk with your physicians, your therapist, your wheelchair providers for specific information regarding what you need for your chair or what is appropriate for your clients. So our guests today are two guests we've never had on the podcast. One of them, we've had his wife on the podcast. She was on our very first episode. He's the other half of Team Garvin. So that's all I'm going to say about him. Doug, introduce yourself. Tell our audience who you are, what do you do, fun facts about you and your lovely wife, if you want to. If this is your chance to publicly talk about her.
Yeah. My name is Doug Garvin, and I have been in the wheelchair industry for 33 years now, coming up on 34. I have worked primarily as a main product designer for Tylite for the last 15 years. And before that, I think I've worked at every company in the industry just about. Spent time with Sunrise, spent time with Kushal, of course, Evers and Jennings and the Vision Group back in the early 90s. I've gotten around.
You've gotten around. But I like how you camped out with us for 15 years. And that must mean you like us.
Yep. This has been a good spot. I've certainly enjoyed my time here at Tylite. I think we make the coolest products out there and happy to be a part of it. As far as Trisha, she is, of course, on the education side, and we met in 2009 at ISS. Yeah, so we've been together for, if I do the math, that'll be 13 years this year coming up.
Wow. So look, a true love story for the complex rehab technology industry. Physical therapist, a wheelchair designer, match made in heaven for wheelchair nerds, we'll say. So that's a little bit about Doug. Y'all will get a chance to know him more as we progress through this podcast. And then we have a gentleman who you've probably never heard from, but it had a major impact on the wheelchair industry for a number of years. Marty, who are you? What do you do? And why are you on this podcast?
My name is Marty Connolly. I founded a company called Spinergy back in 35 years ago, 1987. Wasn't founded originally to work on wheelchair industry, but we were making products for the bicycle industry. And we were the first ones to develop a full carbon fiber bicycle wheel that was used by about 20-30% of the Tour de France riders and was really a great product. We continued to develop some other products, and somewhere around, I would say, 1998, we introduced the first wheelchair wheels. I think it was back in Boca Raton, and there was a young lady from Australia, Dani Totoro, and she was playing tennis down there. She won the championship. She took a chance and used our wheels, and then it started to explode. Then we started to get orders from everybody that was in the tennis activity of wheelchair sports. So we noted that this was a big advantage, what we had technically in the product, and we started to expand it to OEM sales, through Sunrise, through Top End, a lot of the companies that were making chairs and selling chairs back then. As we continued that, we started to make carbon fiber parts for backrests, side guards, seating systems for the wheelchairs. We also made a lot of other types of products like kayak paddles, carbon fiber baseball bats, carbon fiber arrows. Our arrow company we sold in 2010 to Mitsubishi, and we had some nice patents on arrows that we were making, and we were doing millions of them.
Wow, never knew that.
So now they moved that part of the business, their facility, and they're still doing really well with a company called Victory Archery. That's what we had called it. And as we went on with that, we made parts for guitars. We made parts for lots of different carbon fiber applications.
You're teaching me something, Marty, because I never knew that that Spinergy, being a wheelchair nerd, you know, working for 20 plus years of wheelchairs, Spinergy for me is synonymous for top quality wheels, right? Like, I didn't even realize arrows for bow and arrow, and like, but that's fascinating. Yeah, that's super cool. Who knew? It seems like you guys have really mastered the art of using the material carbon fiber. It's all starting to make sense. I'm slowly but surely getting a puzzle put together in my head, because on this podcast, guys, our topic, you probably saw from the titles, we're talking about from ideation to completion, really bringing some concepts to life. So we're going to dive in with these two gentlemen. You heard Doug talk about how he's been a big part of the Tylite brand and product development for over 15 years. So he knows a little bit about bringing wheelchairs from his brain to fruition, to the point where he's actually sitting in one right now, sitting in the CR1 right now. To help me out, Doug, you know, I joined Permobil a little over a year ago. You've been with Tylite beforehand. Can you just give me a quick little elevator pitch on how Tylite got started? And I think sometimes people forget that Permobil is actually owns Tylite. Tylite brand is still going strong and is still there. So if you want to just talk a little bit about that history, that'd be great.
Yeah, Tylite started in Eastern Washington State. I think it was in 98. I believe 97, 98, somewhere that they started doing chairs, and they were first known as Ty Sport and were doing lightweight titanium sport chairs, and realized that, hey, this would be a great material for doing lightweight everyday chairs, which are just as important, if not more so, for being lightweight than your sport chair. You know, the other benefits with the durability of the material and everything, it was a perfect fit. They were started off as a sports company that were doing bicycles and golf clubs. And
I see a link here. Marty mentioned bicycles, Tylite bicycles. I'm starting to see a connection.
They started doing the everyday wheelchairs, and that just sort of became the biggest of their products and focused on that.
Very cool. And then I can't recall, what year did Permobil acquire Tylite?
In 2014.
2014. Yeah. Everything is still out in the state of Washington, correct? Nothing's changed. We still got that. Those folks out there who were building the Tylite wheelchairs prior are still out there.
That is Tylite's headquarters. Always has been. I think always will be. There's nice. Just a lot of inherent knowledge and just learned experience for welding titanium, custom titanium products. You know, each chair is unique. It's a big production facility that is not easily moved. So I think
safe. Number of years, you and your wife lived out there, and now you're down in Nashville at the U.S. headquarters of Permobil. But obviously, you still have a big touch in what happens out there in Washington State too. So
for sure.
All right, so let's jump into it. I want to get to know Doug a little bit more, simply because Doug's brain was a part of this wheelchair we're talking about that came to fruition, a big part of it. So Doug, what got you into designing wheelchairs? Is that, you know, did you go to college thinking, you know, when I grow up, I'd like to design wheelchairs?
Yeah, no, I'm a huge car nut, and always have been since a little kid. And while I was in school, I started off in mechanical engineering. My mom's an artist and my dad's an engineer. And, you know, I had a propensity for both. And he was like, I think you'd really like this field called industrial design. But I was like, no, I want to be an engineer. And after about a year and a half of engineering classes, I was like, Dad, this is horrible. What was that? What was that other thing you talked about? And so I switched over to industrial design. When I graduated, I sent like almost all my resumes out to California. I wanted to live out there. And I wanted to design cars. What I didn't realize until getting a couple interviews was that if you don't go to school back, you know, this was in the early 90s. If you haven't gone to a couple of the premier automotive styling schools that specialize in that across the country, there's two of them, you're pretty much not going to get a job designing cars. So just as a fallback, I sent my first resume. One of the first ones went to Everest and Jennings Wheelchairs, which was one of the first, I guess, commercial manufacturer of wheelchairs that, you know, offered the user some sort of independence. They were still, by today's standards, certainly clunky. They were chromoly folding chairs that you typically associate with as seen in the hospital these days. Mm-hmm. But when those came along in the late mid-60s, early 70s, they were considered state of the art because they were replacing the old school wicker
wheelchairs, the wooden ones
with a big wheel in the front that you saw.
Yeah, we still
Franklin
see those
Roosevelt
today, like
being pushed around and that sort of thing. So that was how I got started. But it was funny, they had been located in California for a long time, which is why they got my resume. And I flew out there for an interview. And they're like, we're just in the process of moving everything to St. Louis, Missouri. And I was like, no. But first job out of college, so I took it. I moved to Missouri. And then talk about fate. About a year after that, they bought the Medical Composite Technology Group that was out in Santa Cruz, California, and said, if you want to stay working with us, you're going to have to move out there. And I chuckled and said, that won't be a problem. And
Nice. So for our audience, some folks don't know you, Doug, and I think you bring a unique perspective to wheelchair design. Why would I think that you, of all people, would bring a unique perspective? It's like, it's as if you know about what it's like to be someone who uses a wheelchair.
I didn't mention that when I was in school, when I was 21, I had a car accident that left me paralyzed, T6 para. You know, obviously being a user, you have a certain inside track or knowledge, I guess, of what works, what doesn't work, and the sort of things that you want to see in being able to make a chair perform better.
Yeah, makes sense. So this question is for either of you, because I don't know who's going to have the better answer for this. But when did Tylight and Spinergy, when did that relationship start to blossom, we'll say?
I'm defer to Marty on that one.
It was 25 years ago. So we've been dealing with each other for 25 years.
Dealing with each other. Yeah. So it's hard to deal with old DG some days. I know. Just kidding, Doug.
No, but very much like a partnership basis from when we started. And that continues today, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's get into it, Doug, because I mean, I think it's important to talk about how chairs are designed. What were some of your, in the past 15 years, what are some of the things, we're not going to talk about what we call lovingly inside Permobile as Doug's baby quite yet, but what are some other projects that you've touched and helped with designing over the years?
My first chair that I designed when I started at Tylight was the Twist. And from the Twist went to the current version of the TR. And then from that went to the Aero-T TRA. Of course, you know, you're doing all sorts of components and different things on all of the product lines, but these were chairs that I designed from scratch, if you will, always with a team of other people too that are helping. You know, I'm normally responsible for taking something up to a usable prototype level of completion to be able to hand that over to an engineering team. I did the Aero X. We had a couple projects. That was about the time that we got purchased by Permobile, which, you know, was good and bad from a Tylight perspective. It certainly gave us more money for being able to do new things, but it also became a much larger company with more rules and processes and things that can also, they're good to have, but they tend to slow things down in terms of the development cycle on the products. So after that, I did the Pilot wheelchair. And since that one, I have been working pretty much full time on the CR1.
Ooh, the CR1. Okay, we'll definitely get to that. One of the things, you know, you mentioned is that obviously with a change or an acquisition, and to be expected when a larger company purchases a smaller company, things change as far as processes and whatnot. With that said, when we think about, you know, what are, for the average person who maybe uses a wheelchair or is a therapist that's listening to this, what do you think has been one of the most surprising things that you've learned in your 15 years of being at Tylight? Not necessarily about the Tylight brand, but what would surprise the average person related to bringing a wheelchair, bringing a concept to life? Because I think that sometimes, you know, we hear and we love our customer feedback, and sometimes we hear people requesting something like, oh, I've had this idea for like 4 years, Doug. Why hasn't anybody done anything about it? What would surprise people to know?
How difficult it is to make something. It is incredibly hard to do, especially something like a wheelchair. There are a lot of moving parts and components on it. Everything that needs to be tested, vetted all the different configurations. It's no easy task.
I think a lot of people forget or don't realize that a wheelchair is considered a medical device. So that, especially when we're here in the United States, that brings in different things. And Marty's talking about how his team develops bikes and all these other great carbon fiber products. But each of those, Marty, if I'm not wrong, because they're different categories of what they're utilized for, has different regulations that you guys have to follow.
Oh, that's right. In the wheelchair market, you have to go through the RESNA test. So we've done that with any of the medical products that we have. And it's really very rigorous testing that a product goes through before it can be released for any production or sale to the consumer. Mm-hmm. We went through that with the CR1 twice, right, Doug?
Yes.
We passed both times on the first try, but I guess the first test was in 2020.
Yep.
And the second one was just recently, maybe 3 months ago.
We actually did a podcast with, and Marty, you probably haven't had a chance to meet her because you're more on the frame and the parts and pieces side of wheelchair. One of our engineers from Rojo actually did a podcast with us, kind of talking a little bit about these standards and explaining why the average person should care if their chair or their cushion or back has been through this rigorous testing. So it is important. I think it's, it's very easy to talk about, hey, I can make this, in my garage. But it's like, a lot of different standards that must apply when creating these things to make sure people are safe and the product does what it says it's going to do.
Yeah.
And with the Rojo, we make the backrest for Rojo.
Right. Of course, part of that testing. That's right. Oh, yeah. So Kara Copeland was the one who did a podcast for us. So you probably know Kara well. All right. So let's jump into CR1. What sparked this idea, Doug? I'm guessing this came from your brain. When did you start thinking about creating something like CR1?
I tell this story a lot. This chair has been over the years, 30 years of designing wheelchairs. Every time you do a chair, there's something that you learn that you're like, oh man, it'd be cool to be able to do this. But, the chair's at the end of its development design cycle inputs anyway. So you store it in your brain for something to use on the next project. And this chair was a culmination of probably 30 years worth of different ideas that, I'm like, man, this would be cool to be able to do. This isn't the right time, the right project. Each project has its own parameters of what the chair needs to do for that market segment, different price points that you need to hit. A lot of restrictions. It's not just, hey, think of whatever is the coolest thing you could do and do that until this project. This was the sky's the limit. Whatever you can think, let's do it.
This is your Disney Imagineer moment, right? Because Disney always talks about how they don't have engineers, they have Imagineers. So this was your moment to be an Imagineer. So Marty, how in the world did you get roped into this?
I got a call from Doug to take a look at something new that he was thinking about doing, kind of talk through it a little bit. And knowing Doug, Doug is like the perfect guy to, obviously, he's conceptual, he's an engineer, he's, that concept makes him into a, like an idea man with a plan, And so with that, and also very, very detail oriented. So looking at this product and looking at some of the capabilities that Doug knew we had, it was kind of a match. It was going to be a challenging project, and it's going to need a lot of creativity just in how we're going to manufacture it. But we knew it was going to be a good idea. And just looking at the product and looking how Doug spent all this time conceptualizing it and putting together the design for it, we wanted to be involved.
It sounds so like there was no hesitation
to say yes.
it was a no-brainer, no hesitation to jump in and say, we're all in with you, Doug Garvin.
Yeah. That's it for sure.
And I warned Marty ahead of time. I think he's still happy that he did it.
I've been friends with Doug's wife, Trisha. That's why I kind of like joke about her. I've been friends with her for a long time. And she was telling me recently about during COVID, about how some mornings, like she would get up because, everyone's working from home. She's like, she would be walking around and she's like, I'd hear Doug and his new bestie, Marty. They were on Teams talking about how they're going to make this happen. And she's like, oh my gosh, like we're in the middle of a pandemic and these guys were still just plugging away because they were going to bring this chair to life.
She's right. That was daily. And on the weekends.
Definitely a passion project. So Doug, what made this design different? What is about the CR1? I mean, I know it's a culmination of ideas, but what really stands out?
The biggest thing is, of course, the frame material. You know, being able to be in carbon fiber offers you a lot of tube shape opportunities that are really unlimited. I mean, carbon fiber can be molded in just about any shape that you can think about. And that was always a limiting factor when you do a chair out of metal. You know, you're sort of bound by the constraints of a round tube, or, you know, doing some manipulation to the tube, or going to like an expensive fabrication method like hydroforming or something. And that there's just a lot of limits to the customization you can do when you start to get into materials and processes like that. And so it was definitely the ability to do a new frame material. And then also, like I had mentioned at the beginning, this chair didn't have a set price point that I had to be governed by. And so that opened up, you know, just a lot of opportunities with new components and pieces to go along with it, just to help really set this chair apart.
I don't want to scare people when they hear that, because they might be like, oh my gosh, what's the price point they ended up putting on this thing? I mean, is this thing going to mortgage my house, a second mortgage out to get it? Because, you know, here in the U.S., if you're listening from the U.S., or we are actually right now in the midst of a advocacy battle for CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to agree to allow people to choose the type of material that their wheelchair is made of. If Doug was getting his wheelchair through insurance and he went in and was evaluated and they said, this is what fits into this category. And he's like, yeah, but I want to upgrade to that one. I happen to have the means to get that extra X, you know, amount of money. Right now in the US, that opportunity is not there. Unfortunately, someone would have to pay completely out of pocket. But with that said, I mean, I don't hate to talk prices too much, but I mean, is this completely out of somebody's reach? How does it fall within the market, we'll say, of other chairs?
It is our premier flagship product. It's our most expensive product. But for what it is and what it's doing, it's pretty amazing. If anyone has ever tried to price a custom fabricated carbon bicycle frame, this will really seem like a good deal, because we're about half of that cost. Carbon fiber is expensive, unfortunately. I would love for us to be able to offer the features and the benefits of this material at a much lower price point for entry level type products, but we're just we're not there yet. And it's not necessarily, I almost said our industry, but I mean, that's across the board. There's just a inherent price associated with carbon fiber.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes people, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, which route am I going to go down? Which material am I going to go down? And with the assistive technology industry in general, whether you're a clinician evaluating somebody, or you are someone who is on the provider side and you're, you know, really having to think about, are you going to be able to provide this chair, get the reimbursement from insurance that will allow you to keep your lights on? I think that that's a sticky subject that some people struggle to talk about. And I can remember back in my days in the early 2000s working at the pediatric hospital here in DC. And I remember having somebody say to me, we were in a team meeting and we were talking about the different technology that's available. And there was a hesitation from a social worker, because she's like, ooh, it wasn't related to a wheelchair. It was actually related back then to an environmental control unit. It's like, this is really expensive. Do you want to show this to his family? Because, you know, they don't really have a lot of extra income to be able to afford this, and this is just going to get their hopes up. I've always been of the mindset, and this is what I love about the CR1, of we need to continue. If it can be made, we need to make it so people are aware of it, not to, you know, not with some sort of, you know, horrible idea that only the elite are going to be able to afford it. No, not at all. But bringing it to market and letting people determine where they're going to get their money from. Working in pediatrics, I learned that we lovingly called them mama bears. If I showed something to a mama bear and that is what was medically best for her child, she was going to do whatever it took. And honestly, it wasn't my business to know what was going on with her finances. I'm not their financial planner, right? I don't know what they're paying for. So I love the fact that price didn't stop the innovation. Marty, this may be a question for you. This is kind of off the top of my head, but do you have any idea what makes carbon fiber? Why is it such an expensive material to work with?
Number one is energy intensive. So in order to take a precursor, which is basically a plastic type material, and run it through the ovens to carbonize it, you're using a lot of energy to do that. And the longer you leave it in there running through these ovens, the more expensive it gets. So you can have a standard mod carbon, you can have an intermediate mod, or a high mod. And the cost just goes up and up and up as you eat up that energy. Then you have to take those fibers and you have to make it into what we call prepreg material. Mm-hmm. You've got to run it through pretty expensive equipment, coat it with a resin and epoxy that you want to have on that fiber. And then you got to freeze it. So you got to keep it in freezers until you're ready to use it. And then the processing time it takes once you do want to use it. So now you have to cut it into pieces that best fit the layup that you want. And you have to take that and you have to mold it in a molding machine. Mm-hmm. It's quite a process to make a carbon fiber part.
Gotcha.
And on the better products, you're not only, you have people that are hand laying those fibers, you know, those sections of cloth into the layup of the chair or, you know, bicycle, whatever it is, to custom tune the the characteristics of the chair or the bike frame, whatever you want to. You can basically tune how you want the chair to perform based on how you're doing them. There's just a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like another reason that this match was made in heaven is, it sounds like the Spinergy and the carbon fiber process and the development, it really sticks with those core values of Tylite, that the chair is created for the individual. It is not something that is mass produced. You know, you're able to measure the individual, get their specific measurements matched at to what is needed. It's still truly a custom wheelchair. Would you agree with that, Doug?
Absolutely. It is and that was one of the difficult things in trying to come up with the design, was how to make it so that it could have that ability to be customized to match each user's individual proportions. It's not as tie fit, to mm-hmm. use one of our industry within Tylite, at least terms for how we customize each chair. You can't do it as much as a bent and welded metal frame chair, but you can certainly, it's pretty amazing how much we can, each chair is different.
I got to ask, Doug, what is up with the front angle? I've seen pictures of it. I've seen yours in person. And I know that there's different angles than we've typically seen in the years. What was the vision behind that? Because a lot of people are like, oh, that looks really cool. But if I think I know you well enough to know that you're a looks cool, but also function kind of guy.
Yeah, it's definitely different, but because there's a reason for it looking different. That dual angle front end is what we're calling it. And rather, mm-hmm. you know, from the knee, if anyone hasn't seen it yet, rather than the tubing going straight down from the knee down to the footrest, it angles backward towards the back of the chair and then about halfway down turns and comes forward. And by doing that, you can get almost around 2 inches of clearance from the tube of the chair being further back to be able to get you closer to something for a transfer or, you know, whatever the situation may be. And also by doing that, the caster arms are attaching to the frame further back in space because the tube is coming from the back of the chair forward to the footrest. And so, you know, you're gaining a little bit of clearance there for maneuvering and tight areas and things like that. It's not life-changing in terms of the difference, but in a product category like this one, you know, just every little bit helps.
Absolutely. There's something else I've been hearing about. I think Trisha was telling me that, oh, she was so excited, so proud of you on this project. Something about the bearings or something. Like, what is what is some caster? And I'm like, okay, like, what's that
she
about?
She might have been required or got paid to say that. I don't know, because that is that has been a pet peeve of mine since I've been designing chairs in the industry. The whole industry does it, and it is, they use the wrong wheel bearing in the wrong application for caster forks for their ability to turn. The industry uses radial ball bearing in there, and they're meant to be in a wheel used in a vertical capacity rolling around. And when you turn it horizontally, it's not made to handle that vertical thrust load that's coming up through it. And so to make up for that, the industry uses two of them to try and help mitigate the problem to begin with. I've wanted to change that for a while. Those, you know, the type of bearing wants to be what we're using. And it was developed by Nachi as an angular contact bearing. And it's designed to have forces in two directions. The problem is there are no off-the-shelf bearings in the sizes that you would need currently on the market. So we had to get ours custom fabricated by the company. And when you're working for products like wheelchairs or something, if you're changing the bearing, then everything else that goes with it has to change. And so there's always a resistance to make a change. Everything is reliant upon something else. And so you're not just changing one thing, you're changing three or four different items that are associated with it. But this one, since this bearing is designed for the application it's in, it can be smaller, lighter, and you only need one of them as opposed to two. So it's just a little detail that I really enjoy being able to finally have fixed.
That's awesome, because it is truly is the little details, I think, that people don't realize. We do talk about the domino effect, like one little thing can change the performance of, you know, we think about everything in life, right? Like you think you're making one small change and then down the domino path, it actually has a totally different impact. So I'm really glad you were able to get that added on for not only for yourself, but also for everyone else who's going to have the opportunity to utilize this chair and access that technology over time. So before we wrap up, I got to ask both of you guys, we'll start with Marty first. What was one of your favorite memories from this project?
There were several of them, I guess, but I know one, you know, we're working hard. So, and we come to the February 5th, 2020, and we finally assemble the product. Mm-hmm. And I'm down there with our manufacturing manager and the guy that does all our tooling and programming and stuff. And so now we're going to give it to Doug, who's also there. You know, everybody keeps real quiet. He transfers into it. It was silence in the room. And he goes around trying to go over every crack in the floor he could find, hit anything he could, get up on one wheel with it. And nobody was saying a word. They just wanted to see. And all of a sudden he stops and he gives us a thumbs up. That was a good moment. You know, that was a real good moment.
Doug, how did it feel for you, though? I've never heard that story. How did that feel for you back on? Marty remembers the day, February 5th. Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, it was certainly one of the highlights. I think mine would certainly be that same trip and that same moment. Only mine was maybe even a little bit before that, when we were putting everything together. Everything went together smoothly, and we put it up on a granite table and spun the chair around, and all four wheels were touching. Everything was perfect. What was from my cousin Vinny, dead nuts, perfect.
Nice. Well, for those who are listening closely, you heard Marty say February 5th, 2020. So we all know what happened with the world very shortly after that, with COVID and everything that is the talk about the trickle down effect. You're talking about with that situation with the castor bearing earlier, Doug, is like, I tell you what, one illness trickled down to still years of supply chain and all sorts of, you know, impact. So while we're not thrilled, and I know you weren't thrilled that it took this long to get it to market, it is exciting that it is launching. It, you know, you took all of these ideas that you've been thinking about, like, you know, those, wouldn't it be cool if you could? And the fact that you were able to design that with Marty and his team, with the Tylight team, and really bring that to fruition, not only for, like I said, not only for yourself to use, but for all these other people. I know as we're recording this, it hasn't launched, but I believe you've taken it a few different places. What are other folks who prescribe and who utilize wheelchairs? What are they saying about it?
We've shown it at a couple of shows. Some people in the public are getting to see it finally, and therapists. And, you know, it's funny. You have two groups of people that see it. Some that aren't really well-versed in the manual wheelchair world of high-end chairs, and They look at it and, you know, pick it up, that sort of thing, go, oh, yeah, this is cool. Then you have people that are wheelchair users, are really into cool things, and they look at it and they go, whoa, this is really special. This is definitely unique. And yeah, it's just been fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the stories about people and how they're able to use it. We will continue as a company to push along this legislation that we're working on with CMS and really getting it so people can make that choice and have better access to it. But if not, you know, you can have access if you're able to, you know, to pay out of pocket. There are opportunities. So don't feel like it's something that you can't possibly afford. There are some different ways to do funding for this. So Exciting opportunities. Doug and Marty, thank you so much. I'm sure you guys aren't done cooking up random ideas. I'm sure at some point, whether it's a small component or a whole another wheelchair again, I'm sure we'll be hearing from both of you gentlemen again. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you, Angie.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Promobile. Today's episode was brought to you by
the Tylite CR1 wheelchair is the perfect combination of lightweight carbon fiber construction and custom fit technology. Designed to maximize your efficiency and accessibility so you can move with ease, the Tylite CR1 will impress you with true innovation, rare in its class. Learn more about the Tylite CR1 today.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.